Oklahoma wanted him to be the champions. Oklahoma invented him.
Excellence has been established by Coach Wilkinson, Coach Switzer, and Coach Stoops. It's my responsibility to defend that standard and to build upon that standard.
Welcome to the Oklahoma Trail Podcast with your hosts, Jesse Crittenden and Brian Clement.
Hello, Sooner Nation, OU Insider subscribers, Coach Brian Clinton enthusiasts, people who have led Tulane to the college football playoff in their first season as a head coach on College Football 25. This is the podcast for you if you've done that, but I wager I am the only one who has the skills enough to do that. And guess what? I've done it. And yes, or I'm doing it right now. I'm gloating about it also. But if you just appreciate the accomplishment that I've made, then this is the podcast for you. This is another episode of the Oklahoma Drill, a podcast fueled by OU Insider and the Rivals Network. I'm Jesse Crittenden, joined as always by a man who just isn't on my level on College Football 25. And that's Brian Clinton. Brian, do you agree with that? And how impressive is my accomplishment on a scale of 1 to 10? Did you lead Louisiana to the championship?
I took the Raging Cajuns to the national championship last night.
Oh, no. Okay. Well, okay. I would be impressed, except the Raging Cajuns have taken a couple of big recruits from me from Tulane.
Hilarious that you say that, because Tulane is the thorn in my side, in mine. So that's actually hilarious.
That's impressive that you beat Ohio State.
No, I beat Michigan.
Michigan
is who I had to beat, and yeah, that was tough. The jet touch pass is like
OP. It's unstoppable.
And Michigan stopped it, and so yeah, it was tough. I had to find out other ways, but I found a couple of play actions that worked off of it pretty well, and was able to replicate. So it was good. But anyways, yeah, good stuff. Fun game. Keeps me up late.
That's impressive. I got to give you kudos. I'm hoping to join you among the ranks of national champions here in the next couple of days. I wasn't going to say this, but very, very quick story. Very quick story. So, incredible season I'm having with the Green Wave. Got a Heisman Trophy winner at running back. It was an incredible season for him. Get to the playoff. I sweep the Conference USA, the American Championship. Get to the first round against Notre Dame of the playoff. Worst mistake. This is rookie stuff. Even people who don't play the game are going to be disgusted with me.
You send it?
No. I would never do that. Crazy back and forth game. Looks like I'm going to lose by 7. I get a pick 6 in the fourth to tie it. Then I get a stop. I drive down the field. With 10 seconds left, I get inside the 5. And I'm thinking, I'm going to hand it up the middle one more time. If I score, great. If I don't, I'll call a timeout, and I'll kick the game-winning field goal. Right before I snap it, I realize I don't have a timeout. Thought I had a timeout. Don't have a timeout. I'm in goal line package, and I can't audible to a passing play. So I have to run it. So at that moment, I'm thinking the only thing I can do is run, and hopefully I score. And if not, try to get everybody to the line, get one more playoff. Because I'm realizing, holy cow, I have screwed this.
Yeah.
Don't score. Run everybody up to the line. 1 second left. I snap it again. Another run up the middle. Notre Dame blows it up. Going to overtime. So I went from a sure win to horrible clock management. We're going to overtime. The game freezes before overtime can start. We do the coin toss, and then the game just stalls. I swear, game just stalls. So not only do I not win when I should have, but I have to replay the whole game. I don't even get a chance to win it in overtime. Now, I did come back. I replayed it and won 24-7. Then I beat Clemson last night in the quarterfinal game, so I'm in the final four. But abomination of clock management, Brian. If that's how Brent Venables handles things in the SEC, Sooners are in trouble. Now, I don't think I'm mostly making a joke, but
yeah.
That's how easy it can happen, folks. It can even happen to me. I could have swore I had a timeout.
Ugh.
How abominable is that?
Yeah, that's tough. I've had that happen already in this game as well. And it's almost like you get caught up in the game. Like you get caught up in the atmosphere and all of like in and don't realize. And so that's probably fairly realistic. So pretty good stuff there.
The other thing I'll mention is, as everybody knows, Tulane goes to Oklahoma in week 3. And good Lord, I wrote a column over at OU Insider detailing my experience playing against the Sooners.
Mm-hmm.
No huddle every play, literally every play. And the stadium is bonkers, especially on All-American.
Yeah.
Forget hot routes. Forget real audibles. It's not happening. Right. Now, I still won because, you know, I'm me. But, but thankfully, OU fans don't have to worry about me controlling the sticks when the Green Wave actually come to town in September. So the Sooners should have the upper hand on that.
Oh, man.
Brian, fall camp starts in 5 days. Today is Wednesday. It starts on Monday on the 29th. Isn't that baffling?
That's incredible.
It's crazy. Now, I'm wondering, because I don't think local media day is going to be till next weekend, so I'm wondering if we're going to get to watch practice a couple days next week before local media day. That'll be something to monitor. But fall camp, I mean, it's basically the official start of the 2024 season. Comes in 5 days, which is just bonkers to think about. And because this is the time that we're meeting before fall camp starts, we figured it'd be a good time to talk all things OU fall camp. And I gave you a prompt, told you to come up with 3 questions that you have for the Sooners going into fall camp. I've also got 3 questions. I'm curious how different our questions are, how much they overlap potentially, but this isn't exactly a draft, but a pseudo draft. I'm giving you first pick of questions for the Sooners heading into their first season as an SEC member, heading into fall camp. Brian, your first question, what is at the forefront of your mind heading into Monday?
I feel very confident this is going to be on both of our lists.
Let me hear it.
The offensive line. More specifically, how much command does Branson Hickman have at center, being so new to this program?
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
So I think the overarching question of fall camp is going to be, what does the Oklahoma offensive line look like? I think we feel pretty confident in 4 of the starters, just as far as like who is going to be where, as long as everything is, remains kosher. You've got, Jake Sexton, Jake Taylor at the tackle spots. You've got, Fabechi Wiwu at guard and most likely Hickman at center there, but the left guard spot is probably something else I'm looking at and wondering who's gonna start there. So a few questions along that offensive line. I think how well Hickman kind of fits in to the mold there is gonna really play a big role in how well that line meshes together and plays, because as we all know, that the quarterback of the offensive line is the center. More often than not, that's the guy who's going to be responsible for identifying not just the mic, but any sort of issues that might come up in their pass protection, any issues that might come up in what they're running and what kind of schemes they may be trying to implement. So he's going to have to know all of that stuff. I'm confident that with him working under Rhett Lashley, there's going to be some similarities as long as they can get the as long as they can get like the verbiage worked out. I think there will be some similarities between what he saw there and what he's seeing at Oklahoma this year. But still, the transition is going to be interesting, and it'll be something to follow for sure.
So the offensive line, I mean, I'm glad you mentioned it for one, because you're the offensive line guy, but also because, yeah, it's, I mean, obviously it's probably the biggest question mark heading into the fall.
Easily. Yes.
And part of it is, it's not that the Sooners don't have talent, and it's not even that they don't have experience. They have both those things, but basically replacing your entire offensive line heading into a season like this is just, I mean, it's just a huge question mark. You could have the most talented guys ever, but this group, basically any group that OU runs out there, basically haven't played together before. I will tell you that CFB 25 disagrees with your offensive line starters. Now I'm being tongue in cheek, but I thought this was interesting. CFP 25 had Jake Taylor at left tackle, had Garen Hatchett at left guard, Troy Everett at center, which obviously that's a question mark given his health. Fabechi Wewu at right guard, and Spencer Brown at right tackle. Now I agree with you. I think the four guys that you named are probably going to be the guys, but I do think that's not a guarantee, because we're not talking about, I mean, we haven't mentioned Michael Tarquin.
Right.
Yeah. You know, we haven't mentioned, Spencer Brown is another guy. What about some of these young guys like Keith Ozeda, Logan Howland, you know? I do wonder how much of an open competition there's going to be for some of those spots, because like I said, I agree with you. I do wonder.
Yeah.
And the center spot is interesting, because I agree with you. I mean, Branson Hickman.
Godsend.
Yeah. And he walks in the door as a day one starter at center. Yeah. But where does that leave Troy Everett and Josh Bates? How much do they see the field? Do they have a chance to really compete? Is it just Branson Hickman's job?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because OU really didn't rotate that much on the offensive line last year. Not really. I mean, Raim, Matower. They had four guys that basically played. I mean, Walter Rouse. They had four guys that basically played every snap last year.
Yep.
I don't know. What do you think? I mean, where does this leave? I mean, now Venables did say last week that Troy Everett, the progress is optimistic, and that I think it's possible he's back for week one. Where does that leave Troy Everett and Josh Bates, you think? And Josh Bates really only moved to center because Everett got
necessity, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think he keeps working at center, or would you think he moves back to, you know, work another place?
So I think one of the qualities that you see in Bill Beedenbow groups, units over the years, is their ability to play several different spots, or the need to play several different spots, just simply because injuries happen, right? Like you have to be, if you're not cross training guys, you're putting yourself at a disadvantage. Like that's just, especially if you have a pretty clear, you know, tier system, I guess, in experience / talent / you know, I think there's pretty clearly right now probably six or seven guys on the roster that have seen some time, whether it be at Oklahoma or not, that you feel pretty good about, just as far as plugging them in and putting them somewhere. And then after that, there's a lot of talent, but the experience drops off significantly. So I think you probably see Bates still work some at center if they're still bringing Everett along. But I think Everett is probably that number. I would say he's that number two guy at center behind Hickman still, as long as he comes along, which I expect him to. Centers are typically pretty cerebral guys, so he'll have to be ready to pick things up and do it in a hurry. I am curious Garen Hatchett is a guy that I didn't mention. I do think he's going to play a role at the guard spot. But Michael Tarquin is somebody that Oklahoma really likes. Like that's a guy that they're excited about, a guy that clearly had a lot of run in the spring game with the starting group. And, you know, I don't know where he fits in everything. So it's going to be interesting to see what that looks like. But I do think the pieces are there for Oklahoma to be much better on the along the offensive line than a lot of the general public really realizes. And a lot of that is just credit to Bill Beatenbow for what we know him to be, which is a technician at that position, at those positions. So in short, there's a lot of question marks as to what it's going to look like, what your two deep looks like. I think there's a good chance, what we saw happen last year with Caden Green, just coming up out of pretty much nowhere and becoming one of the best offensive linemen on the team as a freshman. I think there's a chance that you see a guy like Eugene Brooks, just with the athlete that you're getting in Eddie Pierre-Louis, those are guys that are going to have some sort of role, whether it just be on the practice field or on Saturdays. Those guys are legitimate blue chip, top of the line guys. And I do think that they'll play some sort of role as well. So lots of question marks, but I think you, looking at it from a 10,000 foot perspective, you have to feel better about the offensive line going into fall than you did going into spring.
They should be solid at the very least. I think the floor for this unit is solid. Now, I don't know if I don't know if the floor is one of the best units in the SEC,
right?
But the floor should be solid.
Yeah.
And with potential maybe to be more if everything hits.
And what that means against the defensive lines that you're going against in the SEC, we don't know yet.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
So,
yeah. Also, the last thing I'll say is cerebral. That's a good word. Not used enough. Good word.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Solid word. I'm going to go to my first question. And actually, I've been writing about this position group overview for OU Insider as a part of our fall camp preview series. And I think this is just reasonable considering everything you just talked about and considering that Brent Venables time and time again at SEC Media Days talked about the battle in the trenches. And that would be the interior defensive line. Mm. Brian, how does everything shake out on the interior defensive line? I don't think it's a huge question because I think we largely know who's going to get those two starting spots at nose tackle and defensive tackle. Tell me if you think I'm wrong, but I think it's pretty clear that it's going to be Dominic Williams and DeJon Terry. That's who I think it's going to be. Do you agree, disagree?
I would say if I was to question that, I would say that maybe both of those guys,
you jerk,
play the same position, and you might see a guy like Jaden Jackson or Stone maybe playing 3-tech. But yeah, if I was to just guess right off the bat, that's what I would say. But they always seem to surprise me. So we also have to take into account that there's going to be a lot more three-man fronts with the new stuff, with the new coordinator. So, yeah, you're probably right.
Fair. And that's the thing. So that's why I said, it's not a guarantee I think there are probably less question marks on the interior defensive line compared to the offensive line because, yes. Laning Dominic Williams was just
huge,
massive. In one move, you get a guy that's experienced and has size. And, he's already started 27 games. Unless my math is incorrect, and I've only double-checked it, I haven't triple-checked it. Brian, he has 27 starts. You know who's next closest among the defensive line in starts? You have a guess?
Ethan Downs?
No, interior.
Oh, interior.
At a Power 5 program.
Terry, I guess?
13.
Wow.
So it's crazy.
Yeah.
So that's why, I mean, I think in terms of size and experience, those are your two guys. But you mentioned, look, I think there's going to be a lot more three-man fronts. I think that's part of why they added Dominic Williams as a guy who could be just as a destructive guy in the middle. Yeah. If he hits, if he really pops and he's really a star, which I think he could be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look, the official spring roster has him at 319 pounds. And even Danny Stutzman talked about him at SC Media Days. He was like, that dude's legs are like tree trunks. I think he said one of his legs are like two of mine.
Yeah.
So, let me put it this way. I think Dominic Williams is a surefire starter.
Yep.
He walks in. That's what I should have said. But you look at the rest of it, and it's a question mark, not only because OU could experiment a little bit more with three-man fronts, and hell, who knows what else they're going to do, especially with Zach Alley on board and having a little bit more control of the defense compared to Ted Roof. But let's look at the rest of the list, man. You know who I was crazy about there in the spring. That's Grayson Holt.
Mm.
I was crazy about him in the spring in a professional.
Yeah.
Grayson Holden might have had, in the list of top five players that had the best spring and their most standout spring, I think he's on it pretty firmly.
Yeah.
And, you know, he kind of reminds me a little bit of someone like R. Mason Thomas, where the skills are there, the talent's there, potential's there, but they haven't really had a significant impact at OU yet. That's not blaming them. That's not even criticizing them. It's just considering their potential and talent, they haven't really had a massive impact yet. Yeah. I think this is the year Grayson Holton can have that kind of impact on the interior. Then you look elsewhere. I'm curious to see what they do with Jaden Jackson, who was primarily working as a three technique, but Brent said they could move him around a little bit. What about David Stone, who might have the most upside of anybody on the defensive line? And that includes Dominic Williams. Don't forget about Devon Sears. Don't forget about Ashton Sanders. What I should have said is, outside of Dominic Williams, there's a lot of playing time up for grabs. And even with Dominic Williams in the fold, Brian, I mean, you look at the snaps last year. I mean, for one, you're replacing four of the five guys that You're replacing four of the five snap leaders from a year ago. Jordan Kelly, Jonah Laulu, Isaiah Coe, and I had his name up. So sorry. And Jacob Lacey. Sorry. Jordan Kelly, Jonah Laulu, Isaiah Coe, Jacob Lacey combined for 74% of the snaps last year.
Hmm.
Also, I mean, all those four guys plus DeJon Terry all logged over 300 snaps last year. There's going to be playing time. They're going to rotate a lot. What does that look like? That's my spiel on the interior. What say you?
Yeah, I think I think you nailed it. Really, that is, as you said, I expect Terry and Williams to be the two guys. If they do have a four man front, that would make a lot of sense. I am really curious. It's almost like this is the first time really in a while that you have so many names along the interior of the defensive line at Oklahoma that you get to the three deep and you're like, oh yeah, I forgot that he is there, and they're really happy, or, you know, really excited about him. And I that goes all the way back to that. I mean, David Stone, here's what's crazy about the growth of this team or of that unit in particular. David Stone walks into Norman 3 years ago. He's immediately thrust into needing to be a starting player, like a starter on the defensive line. Like immediately, day one, as a freshman. He's not in that position right now. And I'm not saying, I'm taking nothing away from Stone, because I think he's going to play a role. I think he's going to play a major role for Oklahoma in 24, and it's only going to expand as he, you know, develops and progresses and grows into his body. But I think what you have now is guys that have truly developed. Like Grayson Holton is a perfect example. He has been He's been at Oklahoma for a few years now. We've seen flashes. You've really seen a lot of like just slow, gradual development for him. And then in the spring, it's like something clicked and it felt like he maybe took a step. And if that happens to be the case and we see that come fall camp, you go from having two guys that you feel really good about to, or three guys that you feel really good about with how Jaden Jackson's looked, to a guy that could be a potential difference maker in the SEC, which is just is nuts. So I really like where they're at with that group. I like the upside. I like, but the floor has been elevated to the point that you have to feel really good about it. Because I think if for nothing else, you have Dominic Williams and Terry out there plugging up the middle, and you're backing them up with somebody like Jaden Jackson, who is developing on every play that he's getting, you have to feel good about that if you're Oklahoma. And I think that they're going to be much more than that this year.
I agree, but it's still a question, because I really think outside of Dominic Williams, it's a question about how all this is going to sort out. I think it's going to be one of the more interesting position groups to watch in fall camp. And I want to correct myself real quick. So the five guys I mentioned, they all played 279 snaps or more. Nobody logged more than 385 snaps on the interior last year. So OU played 970 defensive snaps.
Awesome.
Last year. 970. Jacob Lacy led the interior at 385. Basically a third.
That is really good management and really good depth building is what that is. That's excellent.
It is. And I'm going to end the discussion here with this. So given all that info, and given that there's a lot to sort out and that they're probably going to rotate a ton of guys in regardless, if I set the over under of total snaps David Stone plays in 2024 at 250 and a half, true freshman, five-star, walking into the SEC, 250 and a half. That would have ranked sixth among interior players last year in snaps. 250 and a half. Are you taking the over or are you taking the under?
That's a little over 20 snaps a game.
I didn't tell you I was going to thrust this on you. I wanted to keep you on your toes.
Yeah, no, this is good. I'm going to go under, but not by much. And I think the reason why is simply because you're going to have a lot more three-man front this year than you did last year. I think there's just less there's less opportunity there as far as, you know, needing to go that deep on the roster. Now, I still think he's going to get somewhere around 17, 18, 19, 20 snaps a game. It's just a matter of, I think you set a really good over under. So
what if I set it at 215 and a half?
Yes, I would go over. I'd go
so
over.
So you're thinking somewhere between 215 and 250.
Yes.
Somewhere between there.
Yep.
I think I would agree.
Yep.
I think I would agree. Brian, before we get to your second question, I've got a message. Not only a message, but Brian, I want to know if you're like me, because look, we've got a ton of trips. We go to every single OU game in the fall. We go to every game. Part of our job, we go to and this year we've got five trips during the regular season that we've got to make. I don't know if you're like me, Brian, but for me, packing can sometimes be pretty difficult, because it's always hard to know, am I packing too much?
Yeah.
Am I not packing enough? If you're like me, I pack way too much. If it's even at SC Media Days last week, I packed like five changes of clothes and I was there like 2.5 days. Yeah. That's how I am. But look, that wouldn't even be an issue if I knew about Mando's new 4-in-1 acidified cleansing bar. It's a way to simplify the travel. It's a 5-ounce bar that does the work of a shampoo, face wash, body wash, and deodorant. You can also use it to create a rich shaving lather. So technically, really, Brian, it's a 5-in-1. It's a clinically proven to control odor for 24 hours. Mando's 4-in-1 acidified cleansing bar is formulated with a gentle alpha hydroxy acid that stops odor at the source. Regular soap can't do that because the pH is too high. Look, we got a special offer for people out there listening. New customers get $5 off Mando's best-selling starter pack with code INSIDER at shopmando.com. That's code INSIDER, INSIDER, at shopmando.com. That's shopmando.com. That's $5 off for new customers. Code INSIDER at shopmando.com. Brian, second question of this unofficial fall camp biggest questions draft goes to you. Second question, hit me with it.
Who provides the pass rush?
Ooh.
So
okay.
This is fixed on the outside of the defensive line, the exterior, if you will. And I think one of the major question marks or one of the major points in this is PJ Adebarwa ready to take the next step? Does he take the next step? Because if he does, if Oklahoma can get that, if they can get the type of play out of him that they're hoping, that is the position that can take Oklahoma's defense to the next level. Because I think you have all of the other pieces in place to be a truly elite unit. If you have a pass rush, if R. Mason Thomas and PJ Adebarwa bring that to the table, Oklahoma's defense can legitimately be a top 10 unit in the country, period. Like, and I don't think that you're overstepping by saying that. That's going to be what separates the best teams in a conference like the SEC, is who has the guy on the other side of the ball that can really disrupt the quarterback. You know, I think that's where a lot of my respect for Tennessee comes from with James Pierce. I think that is a guy he's a game wrecker, and you need to have that kind of player along the defensive line, and particularly at one of the pass rushing positions. So I like what you have consistency wise with Ethan Downs. You know exactly what you're going to get from that guy. I expect this to be, you know, him be at his best this year that we have seen him, just simply for the fact that he's been here and done it so many times now. So I expect to see the best from him. But as far as a guy that can get after the quarterback, you really need those two guys that I mentioned, R. Mason Thomas and PJ Adebarwa, to really step up and become the guys that they need to be. On top of that, I think Caden Woolard is kind of being undersold a little bit as to what he could be for Oklahoma. That's another guy that brings in experience. That's a guy that brings in production. Regardless of where it was at, he looks like a defensive end, man. Like, it's you don't have to look very far or know really what you're looking at to pick him out in a lineup. He's got the arm length. He's got the size and the speed and looks the part. So you need some guys to hit there. If you get that, Oklahoma's unit could go through the roof.
And I think PJ and R. Mason Thomas are going to terrorize opposing quarterbacks on third downs. Like, I think that's because you look at this defense, and you can really use this kind of to look at the defensive end room as a whole. And really, you've got five guys at a minimum who probably deserve real playing time. And that's Caden Woolard and Ethan Downs, who are your presumptive starters, I think, pretty safely going into week one. But you've got Trace Ford. Don't forget about Trace Ford. Yep. He's entering his sixth season. He's played more snaps on the defense at the defensive end spot. He's played more snaps than anyone outside of Caden Woolard, which is also just a testament to how much Caden Woolard has already played in his career. But don't forget about Trace Ford. And then, yeah, you've got PJ and R. Mason Thomas. And so I think this is going to be less of a question about how many snaps everybody plays and more about how they're deployed. And to me, PJ and R. Mason Thomas have third down, obvious passing situation, just go kill the quarterback, written all over them. And I think not only just those two guys individually, but collectively, because PJ brings his athleticism and lanky, just limbs everywhere. PJ's just limbs. And I mean that in the highest compliment. He's just long and
slender man, but he's 260.
Yeah. On the official spring or on the official fall roster, he's listed at 251, which is already a decent increase from the spring and last fall. Brent actually said he's closer to 260 during SEC media days. That should terrify opposing quarterbacks. And then R. Mason Thomas, who the only thing that I can't get out of my head with R. Mason Thomas is I asked Brent Venables about him midway through the year last year. And Brent said he was our best defensive end during the fall. He has every snap potential or like starting plus heavy snaps usage. He can do that if he's healthy.
Yes.
That's the only thing. He only played 175 snaps last year, only appeared in 9 games. Injuries. That's been kind of the story of his career. PJ played more snaps than him last year. PJ played 184 snaps and appeared in every game as a true freshman. Pretty crazy.
Yes.
But obviously the SEC is going to be a little different. But I think it's going to be less – even if Downs and Woolard are your starters, I don't think they're going to play a super ton. I think they're going to rotate a lot. And that's where I wonder – I mean, yeah, how much they play everybody, but are Mason Thomas and PJ the clear pass rushers?
Yeah.
And Woolard can put pressure on the quarterback too, man.
He brought 11 and a half sacks last year, right? I think off the top of my head. Somebody else that is not being talked about that I'll be curious to see how they fit is. I don't know how big of a role that they're going to play, but Danny Okoye and Nigel Smith are two guys that, one, people are very excited about Norman, should be, freaky athletes. And two, guys that I think fit that role that you've kind of heard about R. Mason Thomas, where they have the twitch, they have particularly Danny Okoye. He comes off the edge. And is really explosive there. So I think that those players are going to have a role in something as well. I don't know how pronounced it will be as freshmen, but I do think you have a lot of names there behind guys like R. Mason Thomas and PJ that, if those guys are maybe struggling, you could see somebody else come up and take snaps pretty quickly just with what they have behind him there. So will be interesting. And Taylor Wine is another guy that is probably going to have a much bigger role this year too. So I like the room. I do like the room and think that they've got some pieces to be excited about.
You went defense. So I'm going to go offense with my second question. And this is less of a question about unknowns. We know this room really well, but I think it's more about how does the coaching staff manage the reps, the snaps? And that's the wide receivers. How do things shake out at wide receiver? It's a good problem to have. OU's got a ton of guys. OU's got a ton of proven guys. I think this wide receiver group can challenge for best unit in the SEC from top to bottom. How do you get everybody on the field, man? Let me just list off the top 5 guys at least, and this is not including talented guys that are also on the roster. Angelo Anthony, Nick Anderson, Deion Burks, Jaleel Farouk, Jaden Gibson. I mean, those are 5 guys that deserve starting level snaps.
Yep.
That probably aren't going to get them. Not all of them. And that's not including Jaquais Petaway. That's not including Brennan Thompson, who's the fastest guy on the team. That's not including the new freshman that they just brought in. How do they manage this, Brian? Because I actually think it's a tricky situation because you've got a ton of options. How do you play them in a way that gets the best out of all of them and reaches the potential of this group? Because I think Angelo Anthony's going to be back for fall camp. I think he's going to be ready by week one. He was your leading receiver through 6 weeks last year. Nick Anderson broke out, had almost 800 receiving yards last year, had 10 touchdowns, tied the team lead with Drake Stoops last year in receiving touchdowns. He's a menace, 6'4". Jahlil Farouk, look, his Alamo Bowl notwithstanding, Jahlil Farouk's just a solid receiver and is entering his senior year and is kind of the de facto leader of this team. You got Deion Burks, who's your starter at in the slot and could end up being the number one target, honestly. And then Jaden Gibson, who finally kind of shed some of the negative environment last year. Oh, he dropped, you know, he's a dropper, you know, he shed all that. Still only had 14 receptions. Brian, I'm shocked at this every time I look at this. He played 232 snaps last year.
Yep.
232. I mean, that's well below Nick Anderson and Drake Stoops and Jahlil Farouk. He played fewer snaps than Angelo Anthony, who missed half the year.
And he had a major impact.
Yep. Had a major. I'm sorry. You can't. Jaden Gibson cannot finish the fall or finish this season with 232 snaps.
No.
Can't. Nope. You got to play him more. Plus, with Angel missing the spring, with Nick Anderson missing most of the spring, and then Jahlil Farouk got hurt midway through the spring, Jaden Gibson stepped up in that room.
Yep.
He got all of the first team reps, made some really big plays during scrimmages. I don't think you can limit him to 20 snaps a game. And the other thing that's interesting is the one game he's played with Seth Luttrell on staff in the Alamo Bowl, he hadn't played more than 24 snaps in a game all year last year. Then the Alamo Bowl game, he played 44 snaps.
Yep.
How do they manage this? And then outside of that top five, are there snaps for Jaquez Petaway? Are there snaps for, you know, the three or four other guys that have real potential in that room?
So
the only thing, the last thing I'll add is there was such a clear discrepancy last year between the top three snap getters and everybody else.
Yep.
Because of the way Jeff Lebby ran this offense, it was a lot of three wide receiver sets and RPOs. Does Seth Luttrell and JoJo Finley, do they run more five receiver sets? Could we see more empty sets with five receivers? Not to mention, also, we've still got the tight end position to look at. So we're not going to talk about that now. But how do the snaps actually shake out here? I'm curious.
So I'll start by saying this. I think you're a lot more likely to see 12 personnel than you would be to see empty sets. Like I think you would see more tight ends. I think it would be more likely for us to see two tight end sets than it would be to see five wide, just with the kind of offense that you would expect from Seth Luttrell. Now he could change things and surprise all of us, but that's going to cut into those wide receiver opportunities.
They were splitting Bauer out a lot during this.
Yes. And I don't think that's a coincidence. Now we are going to see a lot of, and I remember having this conversation, and it may have been off camera, but a lot of what you saw from Oklahoma in the spring was more of a way for them to transition into what we are going to get from Luttrell's system versus Levy's without going too deep into into what their actual stuff is going to look like. Cause you don't want to, I mean, you're not going to give game film to anybody if you don't have to. So there's going to be a lot of changes on that front. And I think that that's going to play a big role in who gets a lot of these reps at wide receiver. And I think you're right. It's really going to be difficult for 7, 8, 9 guys who deserve snaps to get them. And that competition is going to be fierce. And I think that this is where you're going to start seeing either the culture at Oklahoma win out and keep a lot of those guys around that are talented, that are just kind of biding their time and waiting, or you're going to see some of those guys start to leave. Now, with what Emmett Jones is bringing in the 2025 class, I don't think you worry about that. But I mean, the guy is just an absolute monster on the recruiting trail. So, but to your point, if there is anybody that's not already on the Jaden Gibson bandwagon, like
buy the stock,
get there,
buy the stock.
Two reasons for that. One, what he did in spring cannot be overstated. I think that's a huge deal. Not only him stepping into the role that he did, but the way in which he did it and how vocal and how much of a leadership role he kind of took on there was big. But the other thing is he's 6'5", 197 pounds. You just don't have a lot of those guys on this roster right now that are ready to contribute in a big way. Like that's, you know, Ivan Carrion is a guy that's got a lot of length and size to him. But, you know, I think Jaden Gibson is going to be that possession style receiver that you need in the SEC. You need a big target like that outside of your tight end. And I think that that's going to be a role that he's able to play. The other thing that makes him dangerous is that he's incredibly fast at that size. So there's going to be a lot of opportunities for him to really test secondaries. And he provides a lot of issues for that. So, it'll be really interesting to see how they do fit it in, because there are, I think you're going to see a lot more two wide receiver, three wide receiver sets than you do anything else. And that might not have been the case beforehand. So, a lot of snaps, not a lot of them to go around.
It'll also be interesting to see who Jackson Arnold develops chemistry with, because that's an underrated part of this too. I mean, even think about Andrew Anthony. Not that anybody thought he wasn't going to make an impact, but it was clear Dylan Gabriel had a real connection with him early. Think about Drake Stoops. Caught almost 90 passes last year. And his connection with Dylan Gabriel was obvious. And that's the other part. Like, there's almost two things that go into how much a wide receiver has success. And obviously talent and athleticism, all that stuff's important, but it's two things. It's playing time and then connection with quarterback. We've seen a ton of guys. Look at the NFL. There's a ton of guys who have incredible, outstanding seasons, and then there's a quarterback change. Even with the same playing time, they're not the same impactful receiver.
Yep.
So I wonder, what if he develops a connection with Deion Burks? What if he develops one with Nick Anderson? It's just, what if he develops one with Andrew Anthony?
Yep.
That's going to be something to watch too. Brian, third and final question goes to you. Who do you have, or what do you have as the third question you're wondering heading into the fall?
Who challenges Gavin Sawchuk? Who pushes Gavin Sawchuk at running back? I think it's pretty clear that that's your running back. That's your RB1. You saw him finish the year with five straight 100-yard games. He comes into the year as a redshirt sophomore, which is still crazy to me, and has the opportunity to be one of the best running backs in the SEC. Now, the thing that makes this a big question for me is, you can't hand the ball off to a guy 30 times a game in the SEC and expect him to last the entire year. It's just not, they don't make a lot of Leonard Fournette bowling balls that can handle that kind of tread. Right. So, I think it's going to be really important for Oklahoma to have another running back that pushes Sawchuk. Now, obviously, tell me if you've heard this before. Javonte Barnes, has had a good offseason. It sounds like he's had the best offseason so far that he's had as a Sooner, but last year he came in really, I think most people would have given him the nod over Sawchuk as the starter, as the presumed starter last year.
I did.
Yeah. And it didn't come to fruition. It never happened. He was never fully healthy, and he seemed to kind of lack that burst that he had the year prior. So, he's going to play a role. I think Taylor Tatum is another guy that's like tantalizing. I cannot wait to see him run the football. With what we saw from him in high school, incredible athlete. And then all of that goes without even mentioning Caleb Hicks, who may have looked like the most SEC ready running back in the spring. Like, he just, as far as like body composition goes, a guy that definitely can step in and take the workload that it takes to be productive there. And so there's a lot of guys in that room that I think you have to feel pretty good about. And with DeMarco Murray running things, it'll be interesting to see what the splits look like. But feels like Gavin Sawchuk is RB1 there. And then you have kind of like this conglomeration of guys who I think could be immediate contributors right behind him and will need to be, but it's just a matter of who is it going to be.
According to CFB25, when I played the Sooners, it's Taylor Tatum.
Yep.
At starting running back. Now Taylor Tatum is really, really good. He's going to be a guy to monitor, but it's going to be Gavin Sawchuk. But I think that that was actually one of my questions too. And we didn't even mention Sam Franklin, who, I mean,
yeah.
Because that's not even mentioning Amika Megwa, who is a very often forgotten player, but highly recruited out of high school, super talented. He was a 4-star guy. It's just injuries and a bunch of other stuff that's kept him off the field.
Right.
But he's been at OU for a little bit now.
Yep.
And so that's interesting. Javonte Barnes would be my go-to, but the thing, it was so weird that he didn't play in the spring game. Yeah. And I still have not gotten a good explanation for that.
Yeah.
That was so unexpected. And then even Brent's explanation afterwards that they wanted to give snaps to other guys, I kind of
felt like a portal entry was coming and then it never did.
I'm not saying I don't kind of get it, but like, it's not like Javonte Barnes is this incredibly experienced dude that's played a billion snaps.
Yep.
You know, it's not like, oh, we know what we've got in Javonte Barnes. Let's look at these other guys. He's basically only played 1 year and he was a backup. Last year, I don't even really count last year, man.
Yeah.
He barely played. And he shined as a freshman in the Cheez-It Bowl, but he spent the whole year as the backup to Eric Gray.
Yeah.
We don't know what he's like as the number one guy or even a heavy snaps number two guy. Yeah, so the whole thing was bizarre, but he's still more experienced than Caleb Hicks. He's still more experienced than Taylor Tatum. He still has more Power 5 experience than Sam Franklin. He's more experienced. He has more on the field experience than Amika Megwa.
Yep.
I would still think it's Javonte Barnes. He's still on the roster. He's healthy, like you mentioned. I think the offseason reports have been good about him. Caleb Hicks is probably on that top 5 list of spring standouts. I think he has an easy argument for the number 2 spot.
Yep.
It is important because Gavin Sawchuk is going to be the number 1 guy, but is he the clear number 1 guy? Like, gets way more snaps than anybody else? Or does somebody else legitimately push him? And then how does DeMarco Murray and Seth Luttrell, how do they handle this running back room?
Yeah.
It's all RPOs.
Yep.
For Jeff Levy. Do we see more power running? And if we see more power running, does that almost put more of an emphasis on running back depth?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. That is all valid questions, and all of it's going to matter how they manage that room, because there's a lot of guys there. And I think with the injury history for a lot of them, not just Sawchuk, but I mean, most of those guys that aren't brand new have some sort of injury history that's kept them from playing in games at some point. It's just going to take, management. You're going to have to find, and just like quarterbacks and wide receivers, it takes some time for offensive lines and running backs to get on the same page. Timing is huge. Like, people don't think about it that way. Like, if you're a running back, you just get the ball and run forward and a hole just magically appears. Timing, especially whenever you're playing against good defensive units, is everything with not just zone running or gap scheme stuff. It matters in the running game. And so it's going to be the first few games of the year. It's going to be really telling behind Sawchuk, who is the guy that kind of separates himself as RB2, because they're going to be somebody you have to lean on pretty heavily throughout the season, especially going in the back half of the year.
Last question goes to me. You went offense and also took mine, you jerk. So I'm going to go to one of my backup questions and something that I don't know if it's more of a question, but more of a just I'm really intrigued to see what the defensive coaching staff does. And that's at the cheetah position. Really curious about that cheetah position, man, because Justin Harrington's gone. And I mean, they tried out basically everybody with a pulse at the cheetah position during the spring. I mean, that's like, they hey, are you kind of fast and we're sort of interested in you? Go try cheetah. That was basically the way they handled it. And, you know, I mean, from Kendall Dolby to Desan McCullough to Peyton Bowen to Billy Bowman to Samuel Omasego to, I mean, they just tried out a bunch of different guys. And I'm just really curious to see how they handle it, because now it's not like the most pressing question in terms of, I mean, I think we're going to see a lot of movement in that secondary, especially this whole year.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to depend on, you know, are there ever times that we see Billy Bowman and Robert Spears Jennings and Peyton Bowen on the field at the same time together? Who's playing next to Danny Stutzman at the other real linebacker spot? Because guess who it was for a lot of the spring? It was Desan McCullough.
Yep.
Playing a lot of inside or playing a lot of traditional linebacker when most of his snaps last year came at cheetah.
Yep.
So is it Desan McCullough? Do they throw Peyton Bowen there at times? I'd be surprised. Billy Bowman, I think he's still going to play mostly, mm-hmm. you know, safety. But does Peyton Bowen get a shot? Does Kendall Dolby get a shot? He played a lot there towards the end of last year at cheetah, and I thought it was pretty impressive. Samuel Omasego is one of the guys I've got my eyes on, man. He would probably make, I don't know if he'd make my top five of spring standouts, but he'd probably make my top eight, seven or eight.
Yeah.
And even I asked Danny Stutzman about him last week at SC Media Days, and he actually specifically mentioned his ability in coverage. He specifically said Omasego's kind of got the frame and the speed to really handle stuff in coverage. So, and that's the other part of it too, is depending on the package, are you needing your cheetah closer to the line and run support? Are you needing them back pass coverage?
Yeah.
I'm just curious to see, do we see the same amount of rotating in and out that we saw in the spring, or in fall camp, do we quickly see them kind of focusing in and like, no, these are kind of the two or three guys that we're looking at. So am I missing any candidates? I feel like I'm missing one for some reason.
Yeah. Two guys. Freshman is why. Michael Boganowski is one that's going to fit in, and Reggie Powers is another that's going to fit in to that mold. I'm right there with you. I don't know where Jaden Hardy's going to be, but that's somebody else that made a lot of noise in the spring. Anyways, those guys, Boganowski, I mean, look no further than the single hardest hit on in the entire spring game on Bauer Sharp, which kind of made everybody hold their breath for a little bit.
Yeah.
But, you know, those guys are going to have not just opportunities, but that is such a – you saw Kendall Dolby really grow into himself in that mold in the back half of last year. Honestly, I don't know if anybody – really solidified themselves as the dude from Big Lebowski. I don't know why I just used the dude, but anyways, I don't know if anybody really solidified themselves as the guy at cheetah any better than what we saw him do last year, Kendall Dolby. So I expect him to play a big role. If you're in an obvious passing down and you need an extra guy on the field for coverage, I don't think there's a better option than Kendall Dolby, just with what we saw from him last year. So it's going to be interesting. There's a lot of things there, a lot of variables. As you said, where does Desan McCullough fit in with everything? Is he playing linebacker? Is he playing cheetah? Where's he at on the field there? Is going to play a role. And Those freshmen have made a lot of noise, very impressive, big athletes. And like when those guys are out there, the secondary just feels that much more robust. Like it's really started to fill out as far as looking like an SEC defense. So really interested to see how that position plays out too.
That's the three questions for me and three questions for you. And I think we picked some great questions, but you mentioned you had a bonus question.
I do. Yeah. So free this one
for the listeners.
This, yeah. Free content. There you go. This one is really something that I think a lot of people addressed, as you mentioned, kind of addressed in the spring, but hasn't been brought up yet. And I think it's a good time. How does Brent Venables approach his responsibilities as a head coach, not just in fall camp, but in whenever games actually get here? How does that look now with new coordinators? How does that look with Ted Roof out and getting somebody in there that you trust a little bit more as far as running your system and knowing exactly what's on your mind without even having to say it? Game management is going to be as important as it has potentially ever been moving into the SEC, just considering how many one score games you are likely to find yourself in. And those kinds of things cost you games or win you games, depending on who you are. Just ask Mario Cristobal if he would like to go back and change the way that he handled things against Georgia Tech last year. You know, there's going to be situations like that in SEC play too. So it'll be interesting to see what things look like there. And I'm really intrigued to see how much he moves on the practice field, how much he's able to float rather than just sticking with linebackers like we've seen in the past. So I don't know about you, but that to me, that's particularly intriguing and something I'll be keeping an eye on.
No, it's a good question because we saw what he did in the spring and we talked about it. It was noteworthy how much he was moving around and how much he had ceded some control of the defense to Zach Allen.
Yeah.
I mean, Zach had been on staff a couple of months and yeah. He's really young. This is a really big step up for Zach Allen to come be a DC at a major power four, a blue right. blood. And he already relinquished more control of the defense in the spring than he ever did with Ted Roof. And that's just the reality of it. And Brent has talked about needing to be a little bit more of an oversight guy. But do things change in the fall? That fall camp's just a different animal than the spring.
Yep.
This means a little bit more. It's a little bit more significant. And yeah, I think that's a really good the SEC, baby. Just means more. Yeah, I think it's a good question. And that's something honestly, when we go to open practices, that's something we should be looking at is how much is he drifting? And even when he is focusing on the defense or even focusing on the linebackers, I mean, even the last two fall camps, he's been running those linebacker drills.
Yes.
Him and James Skalski.
Yep.
It wasn't Ted Roof, who was the official linebackers coach. It was Brent. So how much is Brent still really running those drills, or how much is it just another stop? Maybe he gets a little bit more into it because obviously he has history as a linebackers coach, but something to monitor. I think we will see more in line with the spring.
Yeah, I do too.
Maybe a little bit more engaged with the defense, but I think still more in line with the spring. That's my expectation.
Well, and I think something that it kind of maybe speaks to his entire approach as a head coach holistically more than anything else, but the difference that we saw from Brent Venables at SEC Media Days was palpable. Like you could really tell, like it's not that Venables never demanded your attention in a room whenever he was talking. That's always been the case because he's an intense guy, right? But I think it was a little different in the way that you expected him to maybe rival Shane Beamer's 17-minute introduction, opening statement, and wasn't anywhere close. I mean, it was concise, to the point, answered a lot of questions, and just seemed a lot more comfortable in his own skin as a head coach, if that makes sense. Like it seemed as if he was a lot more, he was more well-versed. He was more, more confident, I guess, is probably the best way of putting it. And so I think maybe some of that probably spills over into how he coaches as well, if he does indeed feel more comfortable to hand things off to Zach Alley.
Speaking of, did you see Deshaun Foster's presser at Big Ten Media Day's UCLA coach? Did you see it today? His opening press conference or his opening statement? Well, take a look at that, because it's one of the most bizarre things I've ever seen.
Okay.
He basically, it only lasts like a minute, and it's like he short circuits or something. Like he didn't plan anything or like didn't prepare like an opening statement. He basically just says, hey, UCLA, excited to be in the Big Ten. We're from LA. You got any questions? Like that, it was, you should go watch it. People should go watch
especially
it.
Especially like for a first time.
Yeah.
Head coach.
He just got hired in February, and it's their first Big Ten Media Days. So contrast that with Brent, who really was just, I think, just confident and concise and to the point.
Yeah.
And I think that was purposeful.
Yep.
I think he was one of the best coaches at SEC Media Days.
I do too.
From a presentation standpoint.
Yep.
But anyway, not to dunk on Deshaun Foster. I've never had to give a press conference like that. There's a lot of pressure on him, obviously. And he's clearly an impressive guy to get the UCLA job like this. But it wasn't the ideal start to your press conference, I don't think. But how do I know? I'm just the guy that asks the questions. I'm not the guy that answers the questions. I just ask questions. Brian, I think that's going to do it for us here on this installment of the Oklahoma Drill. Good Lord, fall camp, 5 days away. I feel like we were just in the middle of softball. And that was 2 months ago, I guess, basically. Good Lord, it's crazy. Football season is here. Never a better time to go become a VIP member over at OUInsider.com. Make sure to like and subscribe here at the OU Insider YouTube channel. The fall camp underway. We're going to have more content than ever. All kinds of content coming out in the coming days, weeks, and months. Never a better time to sign up. Never a better time to come check us out. Until next week, thank you guys for tuning in to the Oklahoma Drill. We'll be back next week to talk all things fall camp and the start of fall camp. We'll see you guys next time.